Well, hi folks, I'm Richard Searle, and welcome to week 7 of our podcast course on mindfulness, meditation and reflection for leaders and managers. This week, our focus is on reflection and the art of thinking well. But before we get started, just to help us let go of work, let go of everything else going on in our life, be present for the podcast. Perhaps if we could just do some deep breaths in, some deep breaths out, slowly out, deep in, watching your breath as you're doing it, perhaps saying to yourself, breathing in, I know I'm breathing in, breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. But watching your breath, relaxing yourself, and now taking deep breath in and saying, breathing in, calm, and breathing out slowly, breathing out stress, breathing out stress, breathing in calm, a few deep breaths in, a few deep breaths out, just relaxing yourself, watching your breathing. Okay, very good. So I just wanted to respond to one of the questions that I had from one of the managers during the week. So the manager was commenting about how I had spoken about the need to suspend judgment, particularly how this works in groups and teams. And she was wondering, well, how does that line up with, you know, my encouragement that we have great judgment and discernment in leadership, and my tricky puzzle recently where I talked about managers being skillful at solving problems, but leaders having the judgment to know when not to have the answers, etc. And it's a very good question. So I'm a very big fan of judgment and discernment, and we're going to be looking at that today. But there's also a lot of our thinking and opinions and judgments and interpretations which are not high quality. In fact, they're low quality, they're automatic, they're repetitive, and they're not particularly helpful to either action or to relationships. Now, it took me a while to figure out this distinction, and I've used a different word. I call it judgmentalism for that cheaper kind of opinionating versus judgment, which is the cognitive ability that you need as a leader. But more recently, it's become more clearer to me that judgment is part of our cognitive ability. Judgmentalism is actually sourced in our ego and identity. Comes from a different place and definitely has a different quality and value to it. So, yes, I'm still a big fan of judgment, and that's partly about what we're going to be addressing today, which is thinking well. In fact, I think that thinking well is one of the four pillars of great and successful leadership. The other three being acting committedly, managing skillfully, and being good. The problem is that not a lot, or not all at least, of our thinking is high quality. In fact, a lot of it is pretty low quality. It's automatic, it's repetitive, and it's excessive. Now, if you find that insulting, I've often said this in glasses before, then are you willing to volunteer for this experiment? Because I now have this machine. I can wire up your mind. I can play your mind on loudspeaker for 24 hours, and we can all listen in to the quality of the thinking going on in your head at the moment. Now, of course, most people are not willing to volunteer for that because we actually know, although there's some terrific stuff going on in our head, and we're really thinking well about some things, there's also a lot of low rent, even embarrassing stuff going on in there. And I don't even have to use that experiment anymore because it seems to me that the internet and social media and the potential for all this anonymous sharing and opinion making is regularly an example of just that. People's rather ugly, uninformed, and prejudicial opinionating that they're willing to share voluminously because it's now anonymous. So the practice that I'm interested in that can encourage higher quality in our thinking is the practice of reflection. And the possibility that comes out of reflection is that we can actually have insight, including new insights. So reflection requires some slowing down and some bringing awareness to thinking. It doesn't require us to go off on a retreat all the time, but it's actually the ability to slow down in the moment and get distance and to observe and reflect about what's occurring, particularly to bring awareness and reflection to our thinking. And the metaphor that I often use on my own course is the metaphor of the dance floor and the balcony, and that leaders and managers have to spend a lot of time on the dance floor, in action, thinking, acting, deciding, etc. But if you really want to be successful as a leader, you need to build this capacity to move to the balcony. Not just when you're on retreat or on holiday, but in the thick of the action to be able to move to the balcony and observe the action on the dance floor, observe the dynamics, observe what's occurring beneath the surface, and most importantly, catch yourself and observe yourself and have time and a pause to actually insert some choice into how you respond in situations and decisions that you make. And one of the things that we highly encourage leaders to do is to keep a journal to capture their insights that come from reflection. And we know that this is a difficult thing for managers to keep up, but it's a very worthwhile habit, that to capture your insights, because the difficulty is that if you don't have a method of capturing your insights, they can dissipate themselves, and then you have to go through all the same experiences and hardships to have the insight again. And I've noticed, for instance, that I'm particularly strong on reflecting during my summer holidays down in the Otways. I'm furiously reflecting and having lots and lots of insights. And I don't necessarily refer back to that journal that much during the year. I often review it at the start of my next holiday. But one of the things that I have noticed is how much, without me even thinking about it, those insights from those periods have shaped decisions I've made throughout the year, choices I've made, projects I've engaged in, even learning material and teaching that I've done. So the practice of reflection is one of the practices that can help us to develop greater quality in our thinking. We could think of it as bringing awareness to our thinking rather than being automatic and unaware of thinking and just merely ruminating. So a lot of our thinking is actually quite habitual. It's automatic and it's habitual. It goes down tram tracks. And that's the other reason why it's worth bringing some reflection and awareness to our thinking. In leadership, it's worth, you know, as my colleagues, my future thinking colleagues, like Rob Burke and Sahail Ayatollah would say, it's worth examining our worldviews as leaders that we bring to situations and how they limit what we see. They help us see things, but they also limit what we see. And, you know, there's lots of tools that they have available around futures thinking to expand some of that habitual way of thinking that leads to some fairly habitual results. You can even do this at a personal level, because really our personal identity can be really thought of as a habit, an habitual way of thinking about ourselves. And what makes it so strong and why we're so attached to it is because we keep thinking it. It's very, very familiar, but it's a habit of thinking. And if we could get into the habit of reflection and awareness, where we examine our thinking, we can focus on some of these habitual ways of thinking and make choices about whether that's how we want to think in the future. So one of the ways to promote higher quality thinking is to declutter some of the thinking that we engage in regularly already. So Dr. Craig Hassett is on the medical faculty at Monash University, and he's been training medical students in stress reduction techniques for quite a long time using mindfulness. And quite a lot of his work involves helping people to declutter their ways of thinking and some of their habitual practices. He wrote a terrific book quite a while back now called Know Thyself, the Stress Release Program, where he describes quite a lot of the actual program that he works, the 8 steps that he uses in training medical students, because doctors experience obviously a lot of stress. And a couple of his exercises that are worth doing, again, those who've done courses with me will be familiar with these, but they're worth doing right now again. And one of them, let's do a couple of them that he does. One of them is called Ropes and Snakes. So he argues that there's, anything that stresses you is a stressor. But if you examine the things that you get stressed about, upset about, that throw you off your game, you may start to notice that a lot of those things are not snakes. They're not really dangerous. They don't really merit the response. They are, in fact, ropes that you are relating to, thinking about, as though they're snakes. Now, if there is a snake on the footpath, it might be appropriate for you to get upset. But the test of a rope that you relate to as a snake is that once it passes, you say to yourself, well, that all went fine. Why did I get myself in such a knot about all of that? But the next time the circumstance arises, you do it again, habitually. It's worth for yourself right now thinking about this and in the homework after tonight, some very common ropes that people have doing performance reviews, giving talks to the executive or to the board or the shareholders. It's different for different people. But my own example that I often use is that I used to avoid writing because, you know, I needed lots of time if I was going to write anything, get creative, etc. And once I examined that and let that go, I found, gee, I can write quite well and write lots of things, and it was some view or habit that I'd formed that I thought of it like a snake, but it was just a rope, and I could let go of that one. So ropes and snakes is worth exploring for yourself. Another one that's worth exploring is that there can be certain circumstances, people, etc., or emotions that come along that seem like they won't go away and they're really interrupting our performance. They're upsetting us, perhaps. They're making us very emotional. It's like a great big dark cloud that's come along and it's parked itself above us and it won't move. We want it to move so we can get on with things and think clearly and think well and perform well. But the dark clouds come along. Maybe the dark cloud's called the budget time or whatever it is. And he argues that if you really examine the nature of both thoughts and emotions, what you'll find is that none of them hang around. Their nature is they come in, they're moving on all the time. And as I say, the test, if you don't believe me about that, is try to hold on to a really lovely thought that's making you feel great. You know, like the last holiday that you did to Italy, because you know, we're not going to get to Italy for a while. Try to hold on to that and all the great feelings. You'd like to be bathing in it, basking in the glory of that holiday, but it's already been overtaken by so many events, including a pandemic, that it's fading for you. So if these good thoughts, these good emotions don't seem to want to hang around, how come some of the ones that upset us and seem to cause trouble and undermine our quality of our thinking, etc., how come they hang around? And Craig Hassett suggests you want to consider that they hang around because they're the ones you hold on to. For whatever reason, you're not letting them go. Now, there's various ways you can hold on to these things. Often it's by having expectations that you won't reconsider. Sometimes it's by having certain conditions that need to be met that you're not willing to explore or let go or change. Sometimes it's opinions that you're just being so dogmatic about, and it's the opinion that's holding them on. So the ways that we hold on to these ways of thinking and these emotions changes, but it's worth examining these and experimenting with the possibility of letting these go, decluttering your thinking and freeing yourself up. Okay, so let's do a meditation now, and then we'll return and do some more experimenting, if you like, around some of these elements of thinking. But let's, if you wouldn't mind, let's take a break from all that thinking, all that talking. And if you wouldn't mind sitting up straight, if you're willing to close your eyes, relax yourself in your own way. Maybe take some deep breaths in, some deep breaths out. But relax yourself. Let go of all that I was just talking about. You can think about all that again all week, but not now. Let that go now. Closing your eyes, taking some deep breaths. Now, bring your attention, watch your breath, notice your breathing. And now, bring your attention to the darkness in front of your eyes. Notice your eyes are shut. It's dark. There might be some light filtering in, but largely it's dark there. So bring your attention to that. And just notice it. See if you can kind of relax into it, fall into the darkness in front of your eyes. So you're still breathing and you're falling into, so to speak, the darkness in front of your eyes, relaxing, calming, peaceful. Now notice any of the sounds that are happening around you at the moment. Again, you don't even need to label them, but notice that there are all sorts of sounds and just notice them. And if thoughts come along, that's fine, that's normal. Let them come, let them run their course, and let them go when they want to. But you be listening to the sounds, and I'll stop talking for a while. Okay, very good. Now, if you could bring your attention to some of your body sensations, so bring your attention down to your feet and just notice how your feet feel at the moment. Run your attention across the bottom of your feet, across the top of your feet. Notice the small tug of gravity between your feet and the floor. Now move your attention up to your stomach, feel into your stomach. Anything you notice in there? Is it tight? Is it nice and loose, sore, whatever. Notice it. Just notice what's happening in your stomach at the moment. Now move your attention up to your shoulders. We carry a lot of stress, obviously, in our shoulders and our neck. And just run your attention along your shoulders and up your neck, noticing how they feel. And see if by just giving your attention to it, you can release a little bit of tension there. Just by giving attention to it. Noticing how it all feels. Now bring your attention to your face, to your eye socket, to your brow. Notice how your brow feels. Have you got a little headache or not? Does it feel nice and relaxed? And now just run your attention right down from the top of your head, down the front of your body, down your arms, down the front of your chest, down through your stomach, down the front of your legs, all the way down to your toes. And then bring your attention back up to the top of your head and run down the back of your head, down across your shoulders, down your back, down your butt, down the back of your legs, all the way down to your ankles. And now bring your attention back to your breathing. And just watch your breathing. Bring your attention to the tip of your nostrils and just watch the air. The air comes in through your nostrils. The air goes out. Don't change it. Don't try to do deep breathing, shallow breathing, any breathing. Whatever's happening, just let it be. And watch it. Just watch your breathing. Breathing in, breathing out, relaxing, releasing. Deep, natural peace. Just watching your breathing. And if thoughts come, you get distracted, fine. Whenever you can, come back, watch your breathing and see if you can enjoy it. The relaxation, the peace of it. The air comes in through your nostrils, the air goes out. Watching your breath. Okay, so now I want you to do this final step. I want you to notice that you are observing your breath. You're watching. So bring your awareness now to the watching. watch the watching. Bring your awareness to the awareness and just rest in that awareness. Okay, very good. So if you can come back now into the room, wherever you are at the moment. So we have been talking quite a bit about some of the obstacles to thinking well and some of the limitations and some of the excessiveness that happens around our thinking. But it is also worth reminding ourselves that thinking is a powerful tool of leaders. That thinking helps us to shape reality and to shape action. And that there is an enormous power in storytelling when it comes to leadership. And it's worth noting how our thinking also helps us to see the world a certain way and gives us access to the world, but also it can be limiting. But so for a long time, during the Industrial Revolution particularly, our thinking was dominated by metaphors of clocks and machines. And we tended to see things, including organizations, as though they were machines. And the way to get organizations to work well was to, and people to work well, was to relate to them as machines. Now, Einstein came along and sort of upset that a little bit with all of his theories of relativity and bent space and bent time and all of those. And then, of course, quantum physics came along and all the probability rules that seem to apply to small items, etc., changed that view. Now, more recently, we're very dominated by the view of computers and networks. And that we now tend to think of the brain like it's a computer and a network of neural connections, etc. This is a powerful way of thinking and it leads to access to lots of new ideas. But it's almost certainly not the truth or the full truth. And it almost certainly will be replaced sometimes in the future by different metaphors. So our thinking gives us a certain kind of reality and tools to reality. So it's very, very useful. And there's no doubt that the people we lead and the organizations we lead look to leaders to be clear in our thinking, to be able to provide a bigger picture for people, to be able to frame situations for our people in powerful ways, to be able to provide strategic perspective, particularly during challenging times like in a pandemic. It's part of our job as leaders. And what I'm arguing is that if you are going to be any good at that, you need to be reflective and mindful about your thinking in the first place. And secondly, you need to keep learning. So as a leader, you need to stay in training. You don't want to think that you've ever reach some kind of plateau or ultimate peak. And you can now just relax and ignore all this reflection work. Yeah, stop listening to any of the experts and reading any of the new books and the new knowledge, because that will be the death of high quality thinking for you, and that will limit the quality of your leadership. Okay, we need to end this podcast. For the homework during the week, I really recommend A, that you practice some of that meditation we did today. Do it for a minute, do it for three, do it for five, do it for 10. Do whatever is not a struggle for you. Try to make it habitual. That is, make it regular if you can. And secondly, try some of those exercises that we explored today around either decluttering your thinking, but also the positive ones about developing more reflective practice. And one of the greatest ways to do that is a very cheap way. Buy a little diary for a few bucks and regularly reflect and capture your insights. Okay, and I'll see you next week. And next week, we're going to be exploring some mindfulness practices that can promote creativity and innovation in our leadership. Good luck.